are on the line. Live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga, and in Auburn on ESPN 106.7, or online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You are on the line with Lance Daw and Noah Gardner on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope it's going well for everybody out there. We've got Christian Clemente of AuburnSports.com here in the studio with us today to talk a little Auburn football, a little Auburn basketball, everything going on on the plains here. Christian, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm happy to be back here. I guess it's been 2 weeks in a row now because of the Penn State game, and then last week had to run up to the airport a little bit and doing a little early. I know we usually do Friday, but I will be heading down to LSU, but happy to be here.
Well, I'm glad that you are here in studio with us. Noah Gardner up in Sylacauga at the Mothership. Noah, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, but I would be doing better if I could see Christian Clemente with my own eyes, rather with having to hear him through Skype. But Christian, it's good to hear from you, man.
Good to hear from you too. Hopefully next week we'll catch up.
Want to open up the show with some Auburn football talk. We've not gotten to talk to you about what you thought about what happened against Georgia State last weekend. I do want to start there. I just kind of want to get some overarching thoughts on last week's game and some of the storylines we'll get into later, but just thoughts on what happened last Saturday. Did you have a heart attack like I did in the press box?
No, I didn't have a heart attack, but that was, I mean, it wasn't a near disaster. It was a disaster. There's no other way of spinning it. Like that game should not have happened the way it did. Auburn just looked, it looked like they didn't prepare for Georgia State. It looked like they had game planned the whole week for LSU and they were looking ahead and just didn't put too much thought into Georgia State, and it clearly showed. Brian Harsin said after the game they got whooped, and I would agree with that. They got bullied on the offensive line. The defense looked horrendous in the first half. I'll give them a ton of credit for their second half performance. And then obviously what happened with the quarterbacks, with Bo getting pulled, TJ coming in. I don't want to put the superhero cape on TJ too much. He missed a fair share of throws there, but when it really mattered at the end, he made the big plays. So it was certainly not the game that I expected. I thought Auburn would cruise to, like, I predicted like 40-10. I thought it'd just be a nice calm game for Auburn. Was not even close, and clearly by the results and what has happened since then, we've seen that it was a wake-up call for Auburn.
I've asked this question to a couple different people already this week, whether it's on air or off air, but there seems to be different feelings about this. On the spectrum, is it more fluky or is it more that Auburn wasn't prepared for this game because they were looking ahead to LSU?
I think it was a mixture of they weren't prepared and some of the issues that we knew Auburn had got exposed. I think Georgia State game planned very well. They contained the run. You know, Tank Bigsby wasn't able to do too much. Jarquez Hunter looked pretty strong, but still they committed to stopping the run, and they were able to do that. So they put the pressure on Bo Nix to make the plays. He didn't make those plays. They put the pressure on the receivers to go out and make plays. They weren't making the plays. And then they knew what the issues were with the defense, at least in the first half, and they exposed them. So I think it was a mixture of Auburn not being overly prepared and Georgia State having an incredible game plan, but Auburn got lucky to come out of that game with a win.
So looking forward now, looking at this quarterback position, we've talked a lot about it this week so far. I do want to kind of get your thoughts. We have kind of come to the conclusion that what we want and what we think is going to happen, Noah and I, is different at the quarterback spot, who's going to start. I want to get your thoughts. Who do you think is going to start on Saturday, and who do you want to start on Saturday at quarterback, Bo Nix or TJ Finley?
Ooh, okay. So I've been saying, and I'm going to keep rolling with it, I think that TJ should probably start simply based on, I don't know if anyone else could see the sidelines when TJ got put in the game, but I mean, the players were jumping up and down. They were going crazy. They really rallied behind TJ. And I don't think it's a situation where you can say you risk losing the locker room by putting Bo back in the game. I don't think that's fair to say, but you might lose some of the support of the players. You might have some questions there. So if it were me, I would start TJ, and for those reasons, I think TJ will be the one that's starting. Bo is hindered by that shoulder injury a little bit right now. He clearly did not look like himself against Georgia State. And if he's not a little bit better, what's the point in throwing him back out there against LSU? We've seen what he does on the road, and it's nothing special.
What do you think TJ offers Auburn outside of folks jumping up and down on the sideline and an injection of energy into the sideline and onto the field? But in terms of his play, what do you think he offers Auburn that maybe Bo Nix doesn't?
I think he might be a little bit more of a calming presence in terms of Bo, as soon as the pressure comes, he's going to roll out. He's going to try and make a crazy play. He's going to try and make something happen. And TJ, he looked very comfortable in the pocket. He moved around the pocket very well, a lot better than I expected him to, actually. And the whole time, he was keeping his eyes down the field. He did a fantastic job of watching the play, watching it develop, and not panicking too much in that sense. So I think TJ is kind of a calming presence out there on the field, not necessarily in the huddle. I don't know what that's like. I'm not there. But I just think in the way he plays, he has more of a calm play style than Bo Nix does.
Another topic of discussion so far this week. On Sunday, it was announced that Cornelius Williams was let go, former Auburn receivers coach. Talk me through this new receivers coach and how this locker room moving forward is going to approach the game.
Yeah, so it was clear through four games the receivers were not performing up to par. They were not what Brian Harsin wanted, so he ended up making that decision to switch from Cornelius to Eric Kiesaw. I personally disagree with it, but that doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it's Brian Harsin's program. He can do what he wants. And clearly he believes very strongly in Kiesaw. He's coached some really good receivers in the past. For however much I disagree with the actual move, I think Eric Kiesaw is actually a fantastic wide receivers coach, and he could end up being really good for this room because they clearly need the work. They're struggling to get separation.
Right.
They're struggling with drops. I mean, all around, it's arguably the weakest point of the team. It's either the receivers or the offensive line, and I would argue it's the receivers. So that room needs to get better, and Brian Harsin saw that, and he decided now is the time to make a change, and that's just what they ended up doing with. I don't know how it'll impact the locker room. It's tough for those guys. I mean, they had most of them were here before, so they got to know Cody Burns, and they were close with him. And then they get Cornelius, and they bond with him, and then now all of a sudden in the middle of the season, he's gone. So I don't know how that'll impact the locker room. It could be a wake-up call for them. It could be a situation where they're like, oh boy, we better start playing better. Or it could be a situation where they're just really shocked and they don't respond well at all just because they don't like the change and it's just a little too much for them. So I think we'll get a pretty good indication against LSU, how the receivers play, of how they responded to this actual move.
Going on top of that, I've said this throughout the week. You get a good look. It's a measuring stick. Not just for this Auburn football team in terms of performance, but also in terms of how much this culture has set in. Of course, it takes time, so I'm not saying that it's time to move on from Brian Harsin after five games. That's ridiculous, but you're going to get a look at where this culture is at and what has been preached all throughout the spring and into the summer and into the fall and now through four games. Every week you hear, we need to communicate better. Every week, and I think Lance's head just exploded because I just said the word communicate over again. But you think about how often they have said, we need to communicate better. We need to improve. It's a day-by-day process. And to a degree, I think you can make the argument that maybe Auburn's regressed a little bit based off of their last two performances. But you can't close the book on the season. Nonetheless, this game seems to be a measuring stick game for where the culture is at, because this is a place you haven't won since 1999. And if you go out there flat, where is this team at mentally?
Yeah, they haven't won there since before my time. And I mean, as soon as they lost the Penn State game, this became a must win. They have an incredibly tough stretch down the road here with SEC games. They cannot afford to lose to what I would consider to be a mediocre LSU team in terms of how talented LSU usually is. So they cannot lose it, and I agree with your point. If they lose this game, I mean, things can just go downhill so bad in terms of mindset. Georgia coming in next week, good luck. And then Arkansas and Ole Miss. So this is a must-win for their mindset and just for the schedule alone.
You're looking at this five-game stretch here for Auburn, and we were talking about this on yesterday's show, and we came to the conclusion that, you know, obviously I don't think Ole Miss or A&M are going to be in the same spots that they are currently whenever Auburn faces them, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we don't know if A&M is going to still be a top 15 team. We don't know where Ole Miss is going to be at. But you look at this five-game stretch, as you just mentioned, If Auburn doesn't manage to win this game, and I'm not saying that this is must win because I believe you could somehow, you still have a shot against Arkansas. You still have a shot against Ole Miss. I think you still have a shot against A&M, but bowl eligibility, I think, becomes a question in the back of a lot of Auburn fans' minds because, I mean, it's regardless of whether or not these teams are ranked or not, they've proven four games into the season that they are formidable, specifically Ole Miss and Arkansas, whereas coming into this season, during the offseason, I think a lot of people didn't think that they were going to be able to, at least from an Auburn fan's perspective, be better.
Yeah, I mean, I personally, you're saying it's not a must-win. For me, personally, I think it is a must-win. I do not think they can afford to have a near disaster against Georgia State after a loss against Penn State, lose to LSU. I mean, I'm just going to say it now. They're probably going to lose to Georgia and then move forward in that stretch with then your next one would be a trip to Arkansas. I mean, where are the mindsets going to be at for these players?
Right.
What's the quarterback situation going to be like after, in this hypothetical scenario, if it was a loss to LSU and a loss to Georgia, what happens with the quarterbacks there? Who starts which game, whatnot? I mean, I do not think they can afford to lose this game.
A counterpoint to that, and just playing devil's advocate with you, is we saw what this team looked like after three games, an 8-point loss to Penn State, that I think a lot of us would agree that Auburn was close. And barring a couple of plays that didn't go their way, like a fumble right out of halftime, which I hate that for Kobe Hudson, and I hate that we have to keep bringing that up, but that was a major breaking point in that ball game. It seemed like that was one of the deciding plays that tipped the scales in favor of Penn State. But you saw what Auburn looked like after three games, and you think this team's heading in the right direction. They're just not quite there yet. But then it seemingly overnight, of course, it was a week that passed, but from one game to the next, Auburn apparently just fell off of a cliff, you know? Likewise, couldn't the scales turn the complete other direction if Auburn goes into LSU and wins? And now all of a sudden we aren't talking about this team as – we're not talking about this team as struggling to get to bowl eligibility. We're talking about them as, all right, they've got a chance against Arkansas. They've got a chance against Ole Miss. This is still an 8-9 win team this year.
Absolutely, and I think that's why this game is so important. I mean, this game flips the scale. It'll go either way after this game, depending on if Auburn wins or Auburn loses. The season outlook will vastly change based on this game. So I agree 100%, Noah.
Going to head to the phone lines now. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial if you want to give your thoughts on what's happening this weekend. And Shane is on the line with us. What's up, Shane?
Hey, guys. I don't know about other Auburn fans, but I'm not in the least worried about if we're bowl eligible. If we are that borderline, I have no interest in if we are bowl eligible to play another 6-2 team. Like, if we are that type of team, my interest level in this team just drops. You know, if you see Arkansas and Ole Miss, how they're playing good football. That's weird to say, but they're playing better football than Auburn is visually against who they've played so far. And Auburn just seems to be like they're not they're losing cohesiveness. I don't know how else to say it, but they're just out there throwing the ball around, maybe tapping somebody. And these other teams, we seem like we're on a level of like an eight, like Texas A&M this year. Like us two seem like similar teams. Arkansas and A&M, I mean, and Ole Miss, they seem to be putting stuff together. And that's a scary thought that we could actually really be fifth or sixth in the West. But I have no interest. If we lose a couple more games early on, I'm not really worried about if we're gonna play Louisiana Monroe in the Music City Bowl.
And I think a lot of people feel like that oftentimes with Auburn teams that have underperformed right now. And I kind of said this on yesterday's show. It feels a lot like 2015. Now, I'll say this, Shane. I don't want Auburn to miss a bowl game. I would like to see them at least make a bowl game. So I'll still be keyed into it. So that's the only place that I disagree with you a little bit. I understand you don't want to play in the Birmingham Bowl. I don't want to either against a Louisiana Monroe or some other, you know, scrub team across
college. But what is that bowl game? What is that low bowl game? What are you playing for? If you're 6-6 team, you're not really you're playing for the university making more money. That's all you're playing for at that point. You're not playing for any sort of championship for any sort of integrity because you don't have any. You already lost six or seven games.
I think we can both agree, though, that it looks really bad if Auburn were to miss a bowl game. I think other teams can kind of negative recruit Auburn on that. And then the question is, did Auburn make a horrible decision with Brian Harsin as their new head coach because he missed a bowl game his first year? Auburn's just not one of those teams that misses bowl games. And for them to miss one, it becomes jarring. And to me, that is a big difference between 5 and 6 wins on a year. I know it's big whoop-de-doo. Auburn went to the Birmingham Bowl. I'm not saying that's something to be proud of. I'm just saying I think it's that much worse to miss one.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand that, but fan-wise, I don't know anybody that's worried if we will or will not make it to a bowl game, because if that's what we're rooting for, then we've already failed. We've already failed. If we're like, well, hopefully we'll make a bowl game, I don't know. So, but I really think that after this weekend, we will know what type of team we have if we can go into Baton Rouge and pull out a victory, or even if we lose. But it's like a good game, Like if we're competitive in all levels, then you can still see that they're improving. I just don't want it to break down again, like Duke. Want to see some improvement in my team,
I agree with that 100%. And I drew that comparison to 2015. Horrible start to that year. I mean, I remember seeing, I can't remember what cornerback did this, but a player flipped over Leonard Fournette's back and you got ran out of Baton Rouge, and then things turned around, right? Now, this schedule is a lot more difficult than that one was, because you got to play Georgia, you got to play Arkansas, you got to play Ole Miss all in a row after this. So I'm with you. This is a game where the scales flip in one direction. It's kind of balanced right now, and if you take a loss, this goes in a south direction. If you take a win, this goes in a great direction. But also, Shane, I do agree with you. The expectation is not just to make a bowl game; it's to do much better than that. So I do agree with you there.
Yeah, I was coming into the season, I was thinking 8 or 9 wins, and that will be a successful season for her first head coach. First year head coach, and I still think that way. So, but we can't be taking losses to teams like LSU. I think Arkansas, from what I can see, is a good team. So that one scares me more than LSU does. That and Ole Miss. But anyway, guys, I'll get off and listen to you. I do enjoy the show. War Eagle.
Appreciate it, Shane.
Yeah, I really appreciate Shane calling in, made some really good points. But I will say, if Auburn's playing in the Birmingham Bowl and you look up, it's a 9-3 UCF squad. I don't care if it's the Birmingham Bowl. There are stakes in that matchup. There are some serious stakes.
I do agree with him on what he said. Fan interest is going to tank if what you're gunning for is 6-6 at the end of the year. And that's kind of the vibe if you lose this game in Baton Rouge. The projection changes for Auburn massively, because you don't start getting really winnable ball games until you get closer to November, and it makes even those games much more higher stakes, because your margin for error is literally zero. Auburn has 3 wins right now. They have to find 3 wins in SEC play to get to bowl eligibility, and those you would say right now, the most likely candidates for that, based in my mind right now, would be Mississippi State, South Carolina, Texas A&M. Those 3 look like the most winnable games, but your margin for error is 0 if you lose to LSU this weekend. LSU's also on that list of games that I think are winnable. You win this game, though, and if you do it convincingly, which once again I do go back to, and I said this yesterday, my gut tells me Auburn wins this game. I think last week was a fluke and just they weren't prepared and they were focusing on LSU and looking ahead. That's what my gut tells me. I don't see how LSU got 40 points better or Auburn got 40 points worse from what we saw last year between those 2 teams. I just don't see it. And I think last week was on the flukier side of the spectrum than it actually being real problems down the line. And I'm still not sold on Arkansas, still not sold on Ole Miss. Now, those opinions very much so are subject to change after this weekend. They're playing in big games. If Ole Miss takes Bama to the wire and they actually look competent on defense, then I'm going to be like, all right, this Ole Miss team is legit. If Arkansas hangs with Georgia, only loses by like a score or 10 points or something like that, I'd be like, all right, this Arkansas team is legit. They were actually able to go toe-to-toe with one of the best teams, one of the best front sevens, one of the best offensive lines in all of college football. They were able to go toe-to-toe with Georgia in the trenches and hang. I still don't think Arkansas can throw the football, so I still think that's a very winnable ball game. And I still think Auburn's just as talented as Arkansas, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, Mississippi State, South Carolina, more talented than a lot of those teams. And I think they're just as, if not more talented than LSU. So I'm still not giving up on my projection this season of at least 8 wins. But once again, these things are subject to change. You learn a lot after this weekend in college football. This is kind of it feels like a make or break weekend, especially for Auburn, but maybe for a couple of teams. We get a lot of information about this week. All year long, we've been saying, don't overreact. We don't know anything yet. You will know stuff about a lot of teams in college football after this weekend.
We're going to take a quick break, and on the other side, we're going to talk a little Auburn basketball. You're listening to On the Line. Back on the Line, Lance Dahl, Noah Gardner, Christian Clemente of AuburnSports.com in the studio with us. It's been a relatively gloomy Thursday afternoon, expecting some rain here in the next day or so. Want to get into some Auburn basketball talk. I know this was not a talking point that we had on the outline today, but I just wanted to throw out there that Auburn's basketball schedule, the times for all the games have been announced finally. If y'all want to go check that out on AuburnTigers.com, you can go look through the entire schedule and just see when the times are. Just kind of get a gauge for if you're making some plans to go to some of these games, take a look at the times. Conference play opens up at home against LSU. That game's going to be at 6 p.m. on ESPNU. Just some exciting stuff. I cannot wait for basketball season. I do want to get into, Christian, you were able to look, or you were able to look into the practice the other day. And you got to witness some drills, got to see how the players looked. Just kind of give some overarching thoughts as to how this team looks heading closer and closer to the start of the season.
Yeah, so they're ramping up. They started like the official practice, I guess you want to call it, for the season on Tuesday. I want to say, yeah, it was Tuesday. And like you said, it was mostly just drills, but it was a good opportunity to see how some of these players have progressed a little bit. Again, they're trying to figure out what they're going to do at the three with Alan Flanagan out until mid-December or so. Looks to be a mix of Devin Cambridge and Chris Moore, but Jalen Williams and Jabari Smith, we got to talk with Jalen a little bit. He said they've been mixing around, playing some of the big guys at three a little bit, so that is a possibility moving forward. Also got a good opportunity to look at the point guards there with Wendell Green and Zepp Jasper. And something that was surprising to me was actually that Bruce Pearl said they're going to look into playing these guys both at the same time, which I was shocked by a little bit, but it seems to be more of a they want to get Wendell in at the one and then Zepp playing the one and the two a little bit. So it doesn't seem like it's off the table that these two will be on the court at the same time this year.
Which is something that I was going to ask you about. You look at Cambridge and Moore filling in that shooting guard spot for Alan Flanagan or that small forward spot. When you look at this roster right now with Green and Jasper, do we expect at all to see Jasper's role limited even with Flanagan out? Do we expect him to kind of take a step back, or do you truly think that Pearl is going to try and operate with Wendell and Jasper at that one and two and let Moore operate along with Cambridge at that small forward spot?
So I don't know how this is going to change with Bruce saying that they could be on the court at the same time. But I still think KD Johnson is going to start at the two, personally. You know, maybe it's a situation where Zepp starts at the one, KD starts at the two, KD goes to the bench, Zepp switches to the two, and then Wendell comes in at the one or something like that.
Right.
They have a lot of different pieces there they can mess around with. I think at point guard, it's going to be a very situational, very night-to-night performance for each of these point guards. The minutes will be relatively split, but, you know, it's a situation where the other team's point guard is just dominant offensively. Zepp might get a run there just because he's so strong defensively. You know, Wendell, I'm telling you right now, there's going to be a game where Wendell drops 30 to 35 points and he's not going to be missing a shot. I've seen that in practice time at times. I've seen him pull a three from the logo with Jabari Smith in his face and hit it. Like, there's going to be a game where Wendell is just not missing and he has to be on the floor for like the whole game. So I think it's going to be a very night-to-night thing. I don't think the starting point guard is going to really matter all that much because I think the minutes will be split. But it is very interesting that they're at least trying to get those two on the court at the same time.
So you would expect Jasper to start over Wendell?
I think as of now, Jasper will start. I think Wendell is a little more strong offensively.
Right.
So it would make sense if he was like a sixth man kind of leading that second unit where they might struggle offensively a little bit because, I mean, you already have KD Johnson, whoever's starting at the three, which let's just say when Alan Flanagan gets back, let's say you'll have Al Flanagan, so you have offense there. You have the best offensive player, best all-around player on the team in Jabari Smith, and then Walker Kessler. You don't need a ton of scoring at the point guard and Wendell Green at that position. Mm-hmm. So add some defense in Zepp Jasper. He's a perfectly fine passer. He's good running the offense. He's a veteran. He won't make a ton of mistakes. And then have Wendell lead that second unit in the game and get some scoring out of him.
There's just so much talent on this team. There's so much depth. It's hard to find minutes for everybody, right? Wendell, I just wanted to ask you, you talk about his ability to kind of take over in practice so far. I know that him, he's been drawn in comparison to Jared Harper in terms of his play style. Do you see a lot of that in him?
I think
he's just going to pull it from wherever, and he's just going to be able to knock it down.
Yeah, I think he's very similar to Jared. He's obviously a little shorter, struggles defensively a little bit at times, partially because of that height, but then he also has that takeover ability where it's just, it looks like you're watching prime MJ out there. He's just not missing a shot, and Wendell has some of that in him.
I'm curious to see with all the talent, like I just said, it's going to be hard to find minutes. Interesting to see how Babatunde Akinbola fits in, how Cardwell fits in. I mean, Auburn at every single position, once Flanagan comes back, they look loaded.
Yeah, they're going to be absolutely loaded. I think those centers, those backup centers, will find a way to get on the court, though.
Like Cardwell shoots some threes. We've seen him make one before.
He's made a few in practice. He looks better out there.
I would love that. I'd love to let him take some shots. On the other side of this break, we're going to get back to Auburn LSU talk. What do we expect out of Auburn as the game on Saturday approaches? Stick with us. Back on the line, Lance Daw, Noah Gardner, Christian Clemente here with you. ESPN 106.7 Fox Sports Central Alabama. Going to head to the phone lines now. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial if you want to talk about what's going on this Saturday between Auburn and LSU or anything else in the sports world that's on your mind. And Terry is on the line with us. Hey, Terry, how you doing?
Great, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing fantastic. What's on your mind?
I was curious where you guys stood on the talk this week of Bo Nix versus T.J. Finley, especially where you stand on the fact that I personally think that Bo Nix is a five-star flop. And I don't think there's near enough discussion about he's not the best teammate in the world and he's a spoiled brat. I don't think there's near enough discussion about all those subjects. And quite honestly, guys, I think if the chemistry would improve if T.J. Finley gets in there. I don't know that Auburn's got the talent, like you guys say, but he's had his chance, and that's near enough. There's not near enough discussion about that. We're 28 games into this. He's had his chance. He's gotten a little better at times, but he's reverted back to the same old Bo Nix. He's not going to get any better. He's had his chance. He's a junior. So why not try something different? I'm not even sure the quarterback Brian Harsin wants is on campus right now.
That's very fair. I am super high up on Holden Gurner coming in. I'll be honest with you, Terry. What I want to see on Saturday, and we said this yesterday, internally I want to see T.J. Finley start. And I'm trying to figure out if that's impulsive or not, because I'm also trying to figure out how in the world Bo Nix went from looking so good the first 2 weeks. And then, of course, the Penn State game wasn't great, but I also don't think that you can pin the loss to him.
No.
And then to having the worst game of his career, like, period. It may not be statistically, but what we saw on Saturday felt like the bottom.
Now, Noah, not to interrupt you, but not disagree with you, but you have to also consider the first two opponents weren't up to par.
Yeah.
You have to consider that because most guys could play quarterback and be successful against Akron and Alabama State. Let's be honest.
That's right.
I mean, I just think there's not near enough discussion about we're 28 games in. The guy's a junior. He's had his chance to prove it. He hasn't proven anything to me. Now, I agree the offensive line hasn't been good. And the receivers haven't done him any favors either. I realize all that. But some of the blame has to go on him.
And, 100%. He was missing wide open guys.
Near enough talk about his lack of ability as a teammate. I just don't think he's a very good teammate. There's been enough evidence on the sidelines, his arguments with teammates and coaches, to prove that. Even Cole Kublik said on his show out of Birmingham how he stood off to himself and evaded his teammates.
Yeah, he was off to the side the entire time afterwards.
So there's not near enough discussion about that. And I think there's something more to that, quite honestly, guys. Like I said, he's had his chance. He's had his time. He's a junior. Okay, guys, he hasn't reached 20 wins yet.
That's true.
Yeah, so, I don't know what his overall record is. What is it, Terry? Do you know?
I think 18 and 10.
Okay. I wanted T.J. Finley to start. I want to see something new. I want to see them take a stab at it. I think Finley bring some things to the table that Bo doesn't. I think Bo brings some things to the table that Finley doesn't. I don't know for certain if Finley's going to work out, but why not try?
Yeah, exactly. What, at this point, what do you have? What's to lose? I mean, because as you guys just said, they lose the LSU game, they could go on a massive losing streak, and then all of a sudden they're in the Birmingham Bowl again.
Right.
If there is still a Birmingham Bowl.
Terry, do you think there's a difference between who we might want to start and who we think the coaching staff wants to start this weekend? Like, do you think they're still just going to go with Bo regardless?
There's a possibility, although I do think they do go with Bo Nix, it's going to be a very short leash.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, to be honest, either quarterback
again, I keep reiterating, guys, he's had his time. He's had his opportunity. He's lost that now. Look, we'll see. I mean, we don't know. Like I said before, I don't even think Auburn's quarterback that Brian Harsin wants is even on campus right now.
Right. Yeah, and we've said similar things over the past couple of weeks about how, you know, we're just looking forward for Holden Jarner. You know, we're just looking towards that guy and waiting for him to get on campus because I think he could be a stud. Noah thinks the same. But
I also don't want to discount T.J. Finley either, though, because he possesses a very unique skill set that you can't teach, and that is size.
Yeah, exactly. No, you know what?
250.
You know what I like about T.J. Finley? He could fall down and get a first down, third and short.
And on top of that, he's got a cannon for an arm. I think he possesses the arm strength to make the tight window throws. The question is, can he get his accuracy there? And right now, his eligibility as a freshman. I know he played last year, but he's got more eligibility than Bo Nix does, only by a year. But if he's already pushing Bo Nix at this point, a year behind him, what does he look like next year?
Right.
Well, guys, I think you just nailed it, Noah. I think you just nailed it. Pushing Bo Nix. Bo Nix hasn't been pushed. Gus Malzahn didn't want it to be pushed. Auburn's starting quarterback is at Liberty right now. Let's be honest.
I don't know if Willis would have turned into what he was, though.
Oh, I don't either. I don't know that either. But I tell you one thing. I don't think T.J. Finley's there. Well, I don't think he's there if Gus Malzahn's there. You know, that's for sure.
Yeah. So, I don't think Auburn would have gotten T.J. Finley if Malzahn was still here.
No.
No, not at all. Guys, take care. Have a great day.
Appreciate it, Terry. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial if you want to give your thoughts on the Auburn quarterback situation. And, yeah, I don't want to discount – well, I know I'm really high on Holden, but I don't want to discount what Finley brings to the table. And like Noah said, I think that's a fantastic point. What does this quarterback room look like a year from now? Demetrius Davis has kind of just fallen in the shuffle at the quarterback spot. I'd love to see how he pans out. This is something that Noah and I were talking about early in the offseason about Demetrius Davis, how we think that he's also another talented guy. He's a really talented quarterback, can do a lot of great things, but just the timing did not line up well at Auburn. But if we're going to talk about this quarterback room moving forward, I think Auburn's got options. Outside of Nix, if he's not able to be the guy moving forward, and like Terry said, 18-10 as a starter, I think Auburn's got a lot of different options, and Harsin's just going to have to evaluate it and pick one. But and it starts this weekend, I feel like.
Yeah, no, I think they certainly – I'm not quite as high on Holden as you guys are. I think he'll take a little bit of developing here at Auburn before he can really be ready. But they've got Bo, they've got TJ, they've got D. Davis for a while there. So they're good for the future. It just comes down to who will win the battle in practice.
I want to get your thoughts, Christian, on some of that call. What do you think will happen? And then maybe and I know you're a writer, your job is to be objective, but – going back to what we talked about in the first segment, what personally do you think would be the decision?
Yeah, so I think I'm very torn on this because it's a very tough situation where it's going to be an emotional game for TJ. It's not like he looked incredible out there against Georgia State. He made plays when he needed to, but he wasn't incredible. So, and he has also never played in a true road atmosphere, and those fans at LSU are going to be really tough on him. So, now, with all that said, I'm still going to roll with TJ. I think that's what gives Auburn the best chance to win. Bo is obviously not 100%. That shoulder is getting to him. He's never been great on the road. So I think you try and rally behind TJ, carry some of that momentum, and move forward with TJ. But I really would not be shocked to see Bo Nix out there. I don't think we're going to know the starting quarterback until Saturday at 8 p.m. or Saturday at 8:10 when Auburn takes the field for the first time. Whenever Auburn takes the field, the offense takes the field for the first time, that's when we're going to know who the starting quarterback is, in my mind.
We talked about it a little bit on yesterday's show. Is John Samuel Schenker in the Coxcat 2.0? Is that out of the realm of possibility? Could we please see that? I'd love to see this coaching staff do something like that and just light Auburn fans on fire.
I don't see that happening, but I have heard that J.J. Pegues getting like a wildcat snap here and there isn't out of the question moving forward.
Please, please let it happen. Please. I'd love to see that. Noah, do you want to see J.J. Pegues in the wildcat again, or is that something you want to move past?
Goal line packages only.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I like that. I'd like to see him throw it in a goal line package. Do like a jump pass or something like that?
I don't know how well that would work out.
I want to see something like that happen. It's just fun. It's fun for the sport. I want to get to this Auburn-LSU matchup, though. What we expect out of Auburn in this game on Saturday, you're talking about, well, maybe this Georgia State game was an anomaly because this team and this coaching staff was looking forward to this LSU game. Game plan-wise, what do you expect out of the Tigers this weekend?
Yeah, so let me start on offense. First off, Tank is not 100%, but they need to ride him and Jarquez Hunter and Sean Shivers now that he's back. Just they need to ride them to victory. They cannot afford to put the game in the quarterback's hands. It's the same thing as the Penn State game. They can't come out with any stupid trick plays that ends up leading to a fumble or stuff like that. Not, I don't think that play was necessarily really stupid, but it led to a fumble. Right. They need to just stick with the ground game. Don't get too special. Just stick with what they know they have on offense and rely on the quarterbacks when needed. Defensively, they better not rush three and drop eight every single time again, man. That does not work. Auburn doesn't have Derek Brown and Marlon Davidson on that defensive line. They cannot generate pressure with three. And people just keep getting... like, Auburn's defense just keeps losing track of people.
Right.
And Kayshawn Boutte is about as talented, if not a little bit better, than Jahan Dotson. So that's a big problem. I know Derek Mason likes to play zone. He likes his zone concepts. You have incredible man defenders in Roger McCreary, Nehemiah Pritchett, and Jalen Simpson. Utilize the talent that you have. Do not drop three every single time on third down. Bring some safety blitzes down there. They need to stay aggressive on defense. They cannot afford to be passive like they were against Penn State.
334-321-1390 is the number to dial, and Keith is on the line with us. What's up, Keith?
Hey, I'm just wondering why everybody is so passionate about who's going to start. I mean, it's all coming to a head this weekend. I mean, if they put Bo in, which if he's healthy, I think they will, they put him in there and he sucked it up and they have to pull him. And if TJ will get his chance, and if he can pull out a victory, he'll be the man. But, I think that Bo may have been hurt last game, or he may have just not had a good game. But, I mean, the whole team didn't have a good game. I think, more importantly, how they're going to play on defense. That's the big thing. You get to hear Bo hadn't done this and done that, but... yeah, he really has. I mean, he beat Alabama. He beat Oregon. He came from behind against Texas A&M. He had a real bad game against Florida and South Carolina 2019 and then 2020. But, he's got an incredible completion percentage in the bowl games, from what I understand, even though he lost. If TJ's the man, he's going to get a chance this weekend. I mean, if Bo can't do it, and, if Bo's shoulder's hurt, they probably shouldn't have been playing him. He probably said that he could play, and they just went with it. But if he's just shook and everything, TJ's going to be in there. That's a guarantee. And if TJ can't do it, we may see Demetrius Davis or Loy or somebody.
Yeah, that would be bad times for Auburn if it got to that point. Not saying that Davis isn't capable, but just inexperience watching Auburn football. When Auburn's had to make two quarterback changes in a season, it was a bad year. 2012, 2011 wasn't great. I mean, it wasn't horrible, but yeah. I mean, you're spot on. Bo will probably start, and if it doesn't work out right away, they'll go to TJ.
And then if TJ does well, it's his job. I mean, he's hurting, yeah. Afraid to go to the third man. I mean, Demetrius Davis is a highly recruited quarterback and has had a lot of success. And, it doesn't matter what the future has been, what the past has been. I mean, he said there hadn't got a chance yet. And, everybody thinks Malik, Malik has shown that he was as good as he looked like in that spring game when he first got here. And, Hugh Freeze developed him, and if everybody liked what he had to offer, Demetrius Davis has a lot of the same characteristics.
Yeah, I still think there's some development to go there for him as a passer, at least from what we've heard from folks. And he hasn't gotten any reps really at all. And I don't know, Christian may be able to confirm this a little bit better than me. Snap. But from what I know, yeah, he hasn't really gotten any reps, A, in a live game situation. He hasn't even stepped out on the field. And B, I don't think he's gotten any first-team reps at all this year, really. You know, so I wonder how ready he would actually be to step out on the field from a preparation standpoint. And if that actually does give you a better chance to win than T.J. Finley or Bo Nix.
Well, Bo Nix and T.J. Finley both started as true freshmen. And, you know, Bo Nix has survived 2 years. I mean, he looked shaky at times. But, you know, Finley didn't survive and he transferred. But I was impressed with Finley's mobility. He's a little more mobile than I thought he was. You know, maybe he's just so big that he stands in there like a statue sometimes, and just because he's maybe ferocious or something. But on that run, you know, he made a guy miss, and that impressed me. And everybody knows he got a cannon. If he can get his accuracy right, he may beat a man. And he looked like, you know, he got some gamesmanship on that last play. But I mean, I didn't see enough to say he's going to be the next savior of Auburn football.
Yeah. Keith, we appreciate the call, my man.
All right, see you.
That was Keith on the line with us, and yeah, I agree with what y'all were talking about there about Davis. I mean, Auburn's got options moving forward, right? But I just think right now you're looking at either Finley or Nix.
I agree with what Keith said too. It doesn't matter who starts a quarterback; either one is going to have a very short leash.
Right.
After the game, if Auburn wins, whoever ends up winning the game for Auburn will probably end up being the guy moving forward, but I think this is going to be a very week-to-week thing, just based on how brutal that schedule is. I mean, Auburn's going to take some losses moving forward in the next couple weeks here, and every single week it's going to be a discussion of should we make the change to Bo, should we make the change to TJ, stuff like that. So it'll definitely be interesting to watch moving forward, but I do agree with what Keith was talking about. Doesn't really matter too much who starts at quarterback. I don't think the quarterback should be a big part of the game plan anyway. They should just focus on the run game and then use the quarterbacks as needed, whoever ends up being that guy.
We're going to take a quick break. Ed, hang on. On the other side, we're going to wrap up hour number one of the show. Wrapping up hour number one of On the Line, Lance Dahl, Noah Gardner, Christian Clemente here with you. Going to head back to the phone lines now, 334-321-1390. Ed, we really appreciate you hanging on. What's going on?
I'm doing pretty good, guys. How are y'all doing today?
Fantastic. What's on your mind?
Well, I was just going to – I think y'all said most of I think it was Terry that pretty well said a lot of things about Bo having his chances and things like that. But I tell you, I don't think it matters who starts, because with the rest of our offense performing like it is right now, and listen, I am not putting the guys down. You know, we're doing the best we can. We just don't have, I don't think, it doesn't seem like, yet, the talent to really compete with it, what we're going against. And both of those guys are going to play, Saturday. But I do y'all remember, y'all probably don't, when Pat Dye first came to Auburn, he instilled, and in no way am I saying that Harsin's another Pat Dye. I don't know. I don't know how Harsin's going to pan out. I really don't. I think he brought a good attitude. I like him, But our first year with Pat Dye, we struggled. You've got to get some guys in there, we're just not that good on both lines, and it seems like there's some confusion in the defense as to how we're playing, and I agree with everything that some of your previous callers and y'all have mentioned, that there has to be some changes in how that defense is coached, from I'm talking about from Derek Mason down, because we have performed very, very poorly, and it could have been worse, and it will be worse once we get to court, Matt Corral or and people, thinking about Matt Corral, people talking about, if Bo Nix hadn't got it together and we saw these same mistakes, he will not take coaching, okay? He will not do what the coaches ask him to do as far as setting up and you know, doing the technique that they ask him to do. He will not do it. And someone else mentioned, and I will say this for a fact, I drive through there all the time. I see all the players together. The only player I see by himself, and I see him constantly, is Bo. You know, he thinks himself different or above or something. I don't really know what it is. I don't know him that much, but there's a reason. There's something there. But, and I'm not putting him down. Now, y'all don't get me wrong. You know, the family, you know, I'm just saying there's something that he needs to have a heart to heart with his team or something. Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, Warrior guys.
Appreciate it, Ed.
That was Ed on the line with us. And yeah, you know, there are a lot of things that have been speculated over with Knicks and the way that he's related to his team. But bottom line is, you know, whoever starts on Saturday has got to go out there and give Auburn the best chance to win. They've got to be able to go out there and lead that team. And it's just right now it's up in the air whether or not Knicks is going to be able to actually do that. Is he 100% right now? We're not sure. Is Finley capable of doing it? Again, such a small sample size. I don't know if we're truly sure. It's just a lot up in the air right now. But I will say about Knicks, you know, like Terry said earlier, you know, there's been multiple instances where we've seen Knicks not be the most positive teammate on the sidelines. Mm-hmm.
Look, I've been in Bo's corner for as long as possible. I've believed in him. I've defended him more than most people do. I think he's been dealt an incredibly bad hand when he got to Auburn between the old coaching staff and the development and the players around him. I think he got thrown off by Auburn, and that was unfair to him. But at the same time, Bo, you can't excuse him sitting by himself on the sidelines after getting pulled. I don't care how mad you are. Be a better teammate out there. So
that's going to do it for hour number one of the show. Christian, we really appreciate you taking the time to stop by and hang out with us.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
You can check out all of his great content over at auburnsports.com. They do great work over there. Hour number two, making headlines, coming up. Stick with us.
You are on the line. Live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga and in Auburn on ESPN 106.7 or online on foxsports983.com and espnau.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Hour number two of On the Line. Lance Daw, Noah Gardner here with you on ESPN 106.7 and Fox Sports Central Alabama. Intern Sting and Intern Belichick hanging out here with us in the studios. Really appreciate Christian Clemente of auburnsports.com hanging out with us in the first hour. Again, if you want to go check out his content over at auburnsports.com, please go do so. They do great work over on that site. Want to get into our Making Headlines segment to start hour number two here. Got some interesting headlines to go ahead and run down. Starting at the top, we are officially 1 week away from tip-off at Toomers, and I don't believe we got to see tip-off at Toomers last year. It's been a couple years since this happened, but I was present for the last one. I'm going to try and be present for this one. It was a fantastic time, and I'm sure a lot of students are really excited about this next week, Noah.
Alas, Christian, gone before we could really ask him that much about basketball. This is why that was in there. I want to know, this guy's there during the open practices during the summer. He's given us so many great details and so many great, just great information about this basketball team coming up this year that he's seen with his own eyes. And we're only a week away from getting to see this team in person. And granted, a very watered down version of it, but you get to see these guys, new faces in a place that is truly special. I don't know. I'm sure there's probably other stuff like this. I mean, of course, there's Midnight Madness and things like that, but they are doing that inside arenas. Mm-hmm. I don't know about other places out there that are doing something in the center of a college town. I mean, think about how special this is. And I was so pumped to see it when I was a senior coming out and coming out of college. And I mean, it's hard to believe that it's been that long since the last time they did it, but it's just such a cool event at literally the heart of this wonderful town. And you just couldn't draw it up better. You really couldn't. I mean, this is such a cool event, and I'm so pumped for it coming up next Friday, right before one of the biggest football games of the year. It'll be the biggest football game to date at that point, because I do still think Auburn's going to beat LSU. And hopefully that's not an 11 a.m. kick next week. But nonetheless, it's just such a special and cool event that other places just can't replicate.
And I don't think it would be as special had this been a few years ago before Pearl got here, right? The culture would not have been there. And it's a testament to Pearl and this coaching staff and what they've built this program into at this point to be able to have something, an event like this, like you mentioned, outside in the heart downtown at Toomers, where everybody kind of gets to experience this program and these new faces on this team and just the excitement of it all. It's just, this would not have been able to have been replicated before Pearl's time. And I'm just so excited for college basketball this season. I'm so excited for this team. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what some of these guys look like in person. Like you mentioned, no, it's going to be a very watered down product. But at the end of the day, it's just something that fans can kind of get together and experience. And you talk about the selling point for this, right? Christian mentioned that I don't recall if this was either on air or off air, but earlier he mentioned that, you know, there's going to be a lot of recruits at this tip off at Toomers event. It's the ability for this family, this Auburn family, to kind of get together and hang out in such a cool environment. So I am absolutely looking forward to it.
100%. And you know, like I said, just a really neat event. I said this a couple of years ago, and every time that we get to the beginning of the year and I'm reminded of tip-off at Toomers, I still want to say we need to play a basketball game at Jordan-Hare Stadium. And if Auburn failed to sell that out, I would be very disappointed. I really would be. Because I think there's a lot of folks that want to go to basketball games that have a really hard time getting there, because there's only, you know, I don't know what capacity is, but I don't think it's more than, you know, really 8,000 in Auburn Arena, whatever it is. It's not a large arena. It's hard to find tickets to get to go to an Auburn basketball game. I think they would have a really good shot. I don't know if they would go to capacity in Jordan-Hare Stadium, but if priced right, I think you could get folks in that stadium to watch a basketball game. If we've played on a battleship before, don't talk to me about awful wind and weather conditions and things like that. They play outdoor hockey once a year in the NHL. We have seen basketball games played on battleships, open air. We've seen that. Why can't we play in a football stadium, open air, even if it's just an exhibition game? You'll sell a lot of tickets. It'll be a blast.
That would be an incredible venue to hold a game like that, right? And again, like you said, I don't know if they'd get to capacity, but the fact that we think that they would get close or get there is, again, just a testament to where this program's at right now. I mean, this basketball program is at heights it's not seen in a very long time, if ever, and I'm just so glad that it's here. And as a fan of the sport, as a fan of college basketball, I'm thankful that the team that I pull for is competitive, and it's going to be exciting to see this season as we march closer and closer. I believe we're either 41 or 42 days away from the start of college basketball. Really excited for that. Headline number two here, the Atlanta Braves have officially moved within one game of capturing their fourth straight NL East crown. They beat the Phillies in game one, beat the Phillies last night in game two, 7-2, and they can clinch it here tonight.
That's right. Last night, they made a statement. 7-2 win, had 11 hits. Multiple guys got multi-hit ball games. You look at Dansby Swanson. I think he was 3-for-4, 3-for-5. You also look at Austin Riley. He had 3 RBI in the game. I mean, multiple guys pitched in. They made the most of their scoring opportunities. The Braves did not hit a home run last night. They didn't hit one home run, and they still scored 7 runs. That's not how the Braves typically operate. A lot of times we're thinking to ourselves, man, the Braves scored 5 runs on 5 home runs. You know, they did it a little bit differently last night. This team is making the most of their scoring opportunities, and they got another outstanding start from a pitcher. 2 nights ago, it was Charlie Morton. Last night, it was Max Fried. If you get your starter to go 7 innings, only give up 2 runs, you've got an excellent shot to win a ball game. And the Braves now are 1 run away, or 1 game away, I should say, 1 win away from taking this division for the 4th year in a row. I said this 2 days ago when this was a headline, and I said the analogy is this. The Braves were on defense up by 3 in the 4th quarter, and they were able to get a stop. They got the football back in their hands. They held the Phillies at bay on their surge. That got them to about 2.5 games away from the top. And the Braves went through a really tough stretch of ball games. They were having some tough times. You know, they had a 3-7, a 4-6 over the last 10 type of stretch while the Phillies were playing in their sandbox with the Washington Nationals and the Marlins and all these other terrible teams that they were getting to play. The Baltimore Orioles, the Arizona Diamondbacks. It was like, each night it was like a recurring just beatdown on some random terrible baseball team. But the Braves over here playing the Giants twice and the Dodgers and the Padres and all these other really talented teams. And their reprieve was the Rockies, who may be the best 4th place team in a division in baseball. Their record's kind of deceiving. You know, the Braves were going through a stretch, and they were able to hold the Phillies at bay and still have the lead going into this series, where you knew whoever won this series, they were going to have a great shot to win the division. And the Braves have taken the first two. And if they win tonight, if they sweep the Phillies, it's over. It's the Braves division, and they're going back to the playoffs. That last spot still up for grabs. There is no wild card spots available. This is it. Go and win it tonight. Don't do what the Braves have done in the past. Don't leave us wanting more. End it. Now, close the door.
Ian Anderson, the starting pitcher tonight, facing Kyle Gibson for the Phillies, 620 Bally Sports. Make sure you go and tune in to that game tonight. Really big matchup between the Phillies and the Braves later on this evening. Really excited to see what the Braves are able to do to kind of close out the season, because I believe they're going to be able to do it. Headline number 3 here, Virginia and Miami square off for Thursday night college football on ESPN. The Miami Hurricanes on a bit of a slide this season, just have not been there both offensively and defensively. In Virginia, they've got a really potent offense. I don't believe we're going to pick this game, and I don't believe we're going to add it towards our Saturday selections totals.
I don't want to pick it, man.
I don't want to pick this game, because while it is at home for Miami, Miami's favored by about 5.5. I really like what Virginia's been able to do on offense. It just seems like that 5.5 line, I feel like it should be a little closer, man. It seems like a 50-50 ball game in my mind.
Well, it's amazing to me. You get several games a year a lot of times to where you can say, what has the Miami football program become that we're saying that Miami at home against Virginia should be closer than a 4.5-point line right now? I mean, that's basically 1.5 points to me, because you get 3 at home. You know, you just get 3 points just for being the home team. So they're really not favored by that much just because they're on their home field. And granted, Virginia's on a little bit of a slide as well, whereas we thought Virginia might be a pretty good ACC team, maybe try and put their hat in the ring in the Coastal. They're already 0-2. They lost to North Carolina. They lost to Wake Forest, and neither of them were really close. But Virginia is doing something right now that Miami is not, and they are consistently able to throw the football. 430.5 passing yards per game by Bronco Mendenhall coach team. And then on top of that, you go to the rushing attack. This isn't purely just air raid, guys. They're still averaging 115 yards on the ground. These guys are averaging 546 yards of offense. And sure, they haven't been overly tested, and I think we would both agree that Miami's been tested more. But even when Miami has played in those tests, they have completely failed it. They have not looked like they needed to be on the same field as Alabama or Michigan State. Almost lost to Appalachian State. They absolutely decimated, I guess that's Central Connecticut Blue Devils. Yeah, Central Connecticut State Blue Devils last week, 69-0. Woo, you know. They're back at home playing a quality team. I don't want to pick this game because I still think Miami has more talent. I mean, I'm looking at a team that has Charleston, Rambo, and Derek King. And we're talking about the likelihood that Miami drops below 500 tonight, losing to Virginia on their home field. That's how outrageous this is right now and how underwhelming this Miami football team has been this year.
It's been a really disappointing year for the Canes. And I'm not crazy by the line earlier this morning whenever I looked at it was 5.5. So it opened at 3, jumped to 5.5, and now it's come back down a whole point to 4.5. This line bouncing back and forth all over the place. Yeah, I don't want to pick this game. Again, like you mentioned, really like what Virginia's doing offensively. Brennan Armstrong, the Virginia quarterback, has been phenomenal so far this season. Has he played the best competition? No, not throughout the course of the entire season so far, but he's still been really good. I don't want to pick this game because it just seems like too much of a toss-up to me, because I still have faith in, like, well, Miami's got so much talent, you know, eventually they're going to figure it out, but I just don't know if it happens.
I don't think it will. And coming into the year, I didn't think they would figure out. Now, I didn't think that they would be this bad. I thought that they would be like an 8-win team, which in the ACC, that's really not taking advantage of your opportunities. That would be like a 6-win team in the Big Ten or a 6-win team in the SEC this year. But Miami right now, there's issues on both sides of the ball. The defense isn't bleeding yardage. They're only giving up 369.8 per game. And I say only because I look at how many points they're giving up per game, which is 26.3. I might be expecting over 400 yards allowed per game. That's not necessarily the case here. But the offense, if it wasn't for the fact that they scored 69 points against Central Connecticut this past week, these are their performances. 13 against Alabama, where really Alabama had just mailed it in. 25 against Appalachian State. Once again, woo! And then 17 against Michigan State. They've done nothing on the offensive side of the football. Nothing at all. Things are extremely stale. And once again, I go back to, I can't believe this. You have De'Eric King and Charleston Rambo. Why in the world is this offense this stale? Why can they not score points?
You know the answer.
I do know the answer. I'm just not going to say it.
Final headline here before we head to break. The Jacksonville Jaguars still searching for their first win of the season as the Bengals look to move to 3-1, 7:20 tonight, Thursday night football. Bengals, Jacksonville Jaguars. This is a place where you said last week, it's like, man, I cannot imagine a world, it may have been 2 weeks ago, where the Bengals are 3-0. And I'm sitting here thinking, man, even though their schedule's not been fantastic, I cannot imagine a world where the Bengals are 3-1. And I know Jacksonville's so, like, they've just been absolutely terrible, but did not expect Cincinnati to get off to as good of a start as they have.
Not the toughest schedule in the world. Now, there's some names here, and what's hard to believe is that these are playoff staples, but they're all down, and they've caught them at vulnerable times on the Bengals' schedule. Beat the Vikings 27-24 at home in overtime week one. That's week one. We've seen teams lose games that just are head-scratchers, like last year when the Colts lost to the Jaguars in week one. We're like, what is going on, you know? So that one I just kind of wrote off a little bit. But then they only lost to the Bears by 3. And that one seems like an indictment against this team after the way that the Bears played the very next week against the Browns. But then they handled the Steelers by 2 touchdowns. The Steelers are vulnerable at this point. So not the toughest schedule right now. And they're 2-1. But they are definitely a lot better than they were last year. Still need a lot of help in the trenches. And I know we'll pick this game a little bit later. Still need a lot of help in the trenches. But Joe Burrow's delivering the football to his talented skill position players, Joe Mixon, T. Higgins, Jamar Chase. He's got guys to throw to. There's good skill position players on that offense, which is a big reason why they've been able to get out to 2-1 right now, whereas these other three teams are struggling in vital areas on the offensive side of the football, aside from the Vikings, who are very, 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 very bad on defense. The Jaguars here, though, I'll be honest with you, I'll let my bias show. I am rooting hard for the Jaguars tonight because I came into this season thinking, okay, the Browns have an opportunity here to win the division. They have a real opportunity to win the division. For folks out there that don't know, maybe you're listening for the first time, I'm a big Browns fan. The Bengals going 3-1 throws a wrench into my plans. I do not like this. The Steelers are finally down, but the Ravens are squeaking to victories, hitting 66-yard field goals over crossbars against one of the worst teams in the NFL, and they should have lost. I'm over here at third place in the division, and I'm 2-1, and I'm like, what? We have played a very difficult schedule up to this point. What's the deal? Okay, and the Bengals are now, you know, hey, we're about to be 3-1 because we're going to play the Jaguars. So rooting hard for the Jags tonight. I don't think they get it done, though. Bengals are going to win this game.
And on the other side of this break, we're going to get into our Sunday showdown picks. Going to pick a lot of NFL games that are happening over the weekend. Stick with us. You're listening to On the Line. Back on the Line, Lance Daw, Noah Gardner here with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Moving along here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Going to go to our Sunday showdown picks. We've got a ton of NFL games to go ahead and get to. I am 19-12 on my picks on the season. Noah is 18-13. I believe we were just over 500 entering this weekend.
No, 11-10 last week.
11-10, yeah. I believe you went 7-3. I went 8-2. And I said last week, I was like, don't expect anything special out of these picks. I didn't expect anything, but 7-3 and 8-2 is not half bad.
No, we had a good week last week. I think a little bit easier last week. This week, you look at that three. Once it hits 3 o'clock, good luck. So many great games this weekend.
Well, let's go ahead and get into it. Our first game on the docket here. Jacksonville Jaguars, Cincinnati Bengals, like we were talking about in our Making Headlines segment, 7:20 p.m. tonight, NFL Network. Noah, who you got?
I'm going to take the Bengals to win this game. Right now, there's so much dysfunction with this Urban Meyer-led Jacksonville Jaguars team. And honestly, maybe he should take the USC job, because I oftentimes think, man, is this team redeemable? And Trevor Lawrence is struggling so bad right now. It's great to see these two quarterbacks meet on the same field again. We got to see these guys playing a BCS national championship against each other. And this time, I think Joe Burrow gets the best of him again.
Yeah, I agree. I think Cincinnati takes this game. It's just Jacksonville just does not look complete at any specific spot on the field. And I, like you mentioned,
like 5% complete. The loading wheel is still spinning, man. I mean, they're missing a lot.
Right now, like you said, Urban Meyer, you know, I love how we talked about, or at least I said a couple of weeks ago, I was like, yeah, there's no way Urban Meyer leaves for USC right now. I was like, well, you could. Things are not going so hot right now for Jacksonville. Some guys, I don't want to peg Urban Meyer as this three games into the season, but some guys are just better college coaches. That's just kind of my thoughts there. Second game here, Carolina Panthers 3-0 on the road against the Dallas Cowboys. They are 2-1. They just beat the Eagles pretty badly just a few days ago. This one's at 12 p.m. on Fox next Sunday. Noah, do the Dallas Cowboys continue their momentum and get a dub over the 3-0 Panthers?
They do. The Carolina Panthers got the benefit of eating a bunch of candy, and they've been eating s'mores and marshmallows, but now they're doing that. They're about to have to go and run a 5K on that type of stomach. This is a challenge. All the stuff that they've beaten before this doesn't matter. This isn't Davis Mills anymore. This is Dak Prescott. This is what's going to be the NFC East champions. This is a good Dallas Cowboys football team. Get ready.
Matt Rhule's over here playing Mario Kart on 50cc, and this game is going to take it up to 200cc mirrored. Like, this is a legitimate opponent here in the Dallas Cowboys. I think the Cowboys win this game. I don't think Carolina's terrible, but I just think at home, with the way that offense is playing right now, dropped 41 on Philadelphia, I think Dallas gets the job done. Third game here, Kansas City Chiefs at the Philadelphia Eagles, both these teams 1-2, 12 p.m. on CBS this Sunday. This is a game that I would not feel great about if Jalen Hurts was playing slightly better, but with the way that the Chiefs, I know they're on a downward slide, but offensively, I'll just go ahead and say it, I think the Chiefs are going to go in there and they're going to get it done, and they're going to do similar things to what Dallas did to Philadelphia. Are you thinking the similar thing?
100%. The Chiefs have lost two close games to two good football teams, although I think the Ravens are worse than what they've been the last 2 years. That's still a good football team. The Chargers, they just broke through. I love this Chargers team, and we'll get to that later. The Chargers just broke through. Now, the Chiefs have been a little disappointing on offense, had a tough start this past game against the Chargers, but I don't expect them to lose three straight, drop to the Eagles. I mean, what a tough schedule for the Kansas City Chiefs. Had to open with the Browns, and then they had to play the Ravens. And then they last week got the Chargers in their own division. What a tough schedule to start the year. And now they have to go to Philly, which, as far as hostile crowds are concerned, that's still a pretty tough place to play. And their defense isn't playing well right now, but they've also played three good offenses. So I really don't know if we have enough information on this Kansas City Chiefs team to say, yeah, that defense isn't very good. But I do think the Eagles will be able to move the football a little bit. But at the end of the day, Jalen Hurts, Patrick Mahomes, are you serious? Like, Patrick Mahomes all day long.
Fourth game here. Noah, this one's got a lot of interest for you. Cleveland Browns at the Minnesota Vikings. Cleveland 2-1, Minnesota 1-2. This game is also at 12 p.m. on CBS. Do you think the Browns are going to be able to get it done on the road?
I think so, but this is another week where I'm sweating it 100%. I am. I think the Vikings, they've lost close games. They're 1-2, and they just found a way to win. I mean, they extremely close games up to this point, but they just beat the Seahawks by two touchdowns. And so my worry is, well, did the Vikings just break through from an offensive standpoint? Of course, their defense is still struggling, and the Browns' strength at this point is their offense. So I do think that the Browns are able to score enough points to win on the road in this game. I have a hard time seeing the Vikings doing enough here to beat the Browns. The Browns look to be a complete team here through their first 3 weeks, and the defense really turned a corner this past week, especially in terms of how they got after the quarterback. Myles Garrett had a team record 4.5 sacks alone. And that wasn't where the count ended. At one point in the ballgame last week against the Bears, the Browns had as many sacks as Justin Fields had pass attempts. And that was like in the third quarter. It was like 6 sacks to 7 pass attempts. And they gave him no time. Now, of course, the Bears offense is atrocious at this point. Of course, line play is atrocious for them also, but the first couple weeks, the Browns were having a hard time getting into the backfield against these quarterbacks that were getting the ball out of their hands quickly. The offenses were designed for that. Now they're getting to some of these teams like the Vikings where they have a little bit more statue-like quarterbacks. And I like their chances in this one. Defense is starting to get after it.
Call me crazy, Noah. I'm picking the Vikings to win this game.
On what grounds?
Kirk Cousins is dealing right now, man. And you look at what the Vikings have gone through so far this season. Like you mentioned, an early loss to the Bengals, and then they played against a really good Arizona Cardinals team on the road, only lost by one. Past weekend, they beat the Seahawks 30-17 at home against the Browns. I know the Browns are a good team. I know they're going to be able to score points in this game, but I like my chances with Kirk Cousins. I think Minnesota gets back on track. 2-2, Minnesota Vikings. I think they pull out the win.
I'm hurt.
I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry. I hate to do it to you. Fifth game here, Arizona Cardinals at the Los Angeles Rams. This is going to be a fantastic game. Both teams are undefeated, 3:05 p.m. on Fox. This is a game that I could see going potentially either way. I think the Rams are going to go out there and win after seeing them play against quality competition in the Bucs and play so well against them. I don't feel good picking against this team at home, but Arizona is also a really, really good squad as well.
They are. They didn't look good this past week, but you're 100% right. Matthew Stafford rose to the occasion this past week against the Buccaneers. I mean, that's one of the first, like, major meaningful games that he's gotten to play in his NFL career. I mean, he's played in meaningful games in the past, but none, like, it's just not often when he was in Detroit. Now he's playing in games like this where his team's 3-0, playing against another divisional opponent that's 3-0 that's also very good. And if he wins this game, his team is in the driver's seat in the NFC West. This is what's fun and why I'm rooting for Matthew Stafford this year, because this guy was in the barren talent wasteland of the Detroit Lions. He made it out. This guy got through the desert, okay? He paid his dues, and now he is in L.A. in the Oasis, and he is enjoying it. Go Rams, man. I will take the Rams to win this game.
I think right now, looking at the Rams and all of the talent that they have outside of Stafford on roster, I mean, Cooper Kupp, one of the best receivers in the game right now, did not expect that heading into this season, but three games in, he's looking pretty solid. I like LA's chances to make a Super Bowl run. I know it's early. I know it's really, really tough to predict, especially after seeing, you know, the Rams have played the Bears and the Colts. Like, who cares? But, like, you look down the rest of the schedule, I think there's a lot of games that they can either win or at least compete in. We're going to figure out a lot about this team in this game and in games to come. But early Super Bowl contenders and early playoff contenders, I think this is a team that can certainly make a run.
I've got a fun fact about this game real quick. I will say this. The defense could catch up to them if it does not improve. They have played very well up to this point, but the first two teams that they played against are currently inept offensively in the Colts and the Bears. And the Buccaneers are very good, held them to 24. But right now, the Rams are giving up more yards on defense than they are averaging on offense.
And that could become an issue down the line, but I do like what Stafford's doing on offense right now. On the other side of this break, we get back to something we've not done in a while in On the Fence or Out. You're listening to On the Line.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
Hey, sports fans, Jeff Meyer, senior pastor, First Baptist Church of Opelika. Well, those of you who know me and my family, I'm a little partial toward kickers. So today, I want to talk about a new NFL record. That's right. Justin Tucker made a field goal from 66 yards. Now, I realize that it hit the crossbar and it bounced over, but let's all admit, nobody else has ever kicked one from that distance in a game and made it before. Why is this important? Because nobody had ever succeeded, and he hit the ball anyway. Oftentimes, when it comes to the things that the Lord asks us to do in life, we see a situation, a relationship, whatever it is, and we say, God, I've never done this before. I've never gone there before. I've never done this. Oftentimes, the Lord asks us to do things that we've never done before because he knows that he has put it within us to accomplish the goal, whatever it may be. I know that what you're facing today may look like that 66-yard field goal. Nobody else has ever done it, but if the Lord's called you to do it, go for it anyway. Y'all have a great day.
We teased it going into break. It's a segment we've not done in a really long time. In, On the Fence, or Out. I absolutely love these. I'm very glad that Noah was able to put some of these together because they're tough. If you're not familiar with this segment, it's pretty simple. I'm going to give you three college football teams. If you want to call in and give your thoughts, 334-321-1390, but there's going to be three college football teams, and you have to decide which team you're in on, which team you're on the fence on, and which team you're out on. It sounds simple, but once you get into some of these different sets of teams, it becomes quite difficult. Noah, are you ready?
I am ready.
First group of teams here in On the Fence or Out, Arkansas, Ohio State, and Oklahoma. Noah, who you got?
I created these. This is so much fun. I'm looking forward to it. Oklahoma, I am in on, and that may shock some people, but I'm also taking into account each one of these teams plays in vastly different conferences. Vastly different. And the Big 12 looks a little bit better than maybe we thought it was going to be once Iowa State fell apart, because Oklahoma State's a lot better. Baylor looks still pretty good. I'm not writing off Kansas State just yet, just because their quarterback's hurt. Once he comes back, are they going to get back into the conversation? We'll get to find out. They play Oklahoma this week. There's some more ranked teams in the Big 12 than maybe we originally thought there was going to be. You could have gone this whole year and thought, man, it's just going to be Oklahoma and Iowa State. And Texas is getting back into the mix. They look a lot better. But with that being said, I do think that among these three conferences that we're looking at, Oklahoma has the much easier path to 10 wins than Ohio State and Arkansas. So I am still in on Oklahoma. I'm using past precedent here to make my argument. Last year, Oklahoma was 2-2. I picked them to lose three straight games. I was wrong. They turned into one of the best teams in college football by the end of the year. I still think that's possible for them here. Quit chanting to bench Spencer Rattler. He's not Bo Nix. Stop this. This is ridiculous. Oklahoma, I'm in on. Ohio State, I need more information. I need more information. I still think C.J. Stroud is so much better than K.J. Jefferson here that I think it's more likely Ohio State hits 10 wins and there's so much more talent around him than Arkansas hits 10 wins with K.J. Jefferson and Treylon Burks and Catalan on defense. I don't think that Arkansas has enough talent to brave their way through the league. And people will begin to see that after this week against Georgia. They'll lose to Ole Miss. They still got a loss to Alabama. That's 9 wins right there. Whereas Ohio State, I think, will only suffer maybe one more loss this year.
In terms of longevity in college football this season, I don't like these three teams very much. But I will say I'm in on Ohio State. I am on the fence on Oklahoma, and I'm out on Arkansas. The reason that I am in on Ohio State and I am on the fence on Oklahoma is you talk about that schedule. And I just feel like with Ohio State's talent that they will be able to kind of run the Big Ten better than Oklahoma runs the Big 12, right? Because we've seen in the past them shoot themselves in the foot in the regular season. Will they do that this season? I don't know. But you look at the Red River rivalry against Texas. You go on the road to play Baylor in November, Oklahoma State in November. I just see a lot of opportunities here for Oklahoma to lose because they've not looked great over the past two games. And don't forget, you play Kansas State this Saturday, a team you've not beaten in two seasons. So that's my reasoning for it. I'm not particularly high on any of these squads. The reason I'm out on Arkansas is because I just don't believe they're much better than an 8-win team. I think we're going to figure that out over the course of these next few weeks. But yeah,
I want to add something about Oklahoma real quick, though, before we move on to the next one. They are, and Arkansas is undefeated as well. I don't think for long, but between Oklahoma and Ohio State, and I agree with you, that could have gone either way. I'm not mad that you put Ohio State there. I do think it does say something that Oklahoma is undefeated right now and Ohio State isn't. Now, have they played Oregon or a tougher schedule than Ohio State at this point? I think they've played more quality teams than Ohio State, but Ohio State's played the best team of the two squads in Oregon. If Oklahoma figures it out, it's still very much so on the table for these guys to go undefeated. And it's still so early, and everybody else has so many issues. What happens if Oklahoma fixes their issues, and then they're the team that we all thought they were coming into the season, and they win the Natty, right?
I think it's possible. I think it's absolutely possible. It's just the trajectory they're on right now, they're going to have to make some adjustments to get back to that point. Second group of teams here, Iowa, Michigan, Michigan State. Got to pick who you are in on the fence and out on. Noah, who are you in on?
It's about to shock some people. I do not like this Iowa Hawkeye football team, but I'll get to that in a second. I am going to be in on Michigan State. This may be the hardest group, but I'm in on Michigan State. I need more information on Michigan, and I'm out on Iowa. Michigan State has had more resounding wins than Michigan has up to this point against quality teams. Michigan State has thumped Miami 38-17. They beat Northwestern 38-21. Last week, I think they played a Nebraska team that's improving rapidly, and they still found a way to win when they weren't playing their best. I think they're getting a little bit better quarterback play than Michigan is at this point. And you see Michigan, and you watch the Washington game, not a good football team. You watch Rutgers play, still not a good football team. I think they're better, but still not good. And they get up to a 20-3 lead, and then Rutgers battles it back to 20-13. And I can't remember what the final score was this past weekend, but still, just something about that Rutgers game this past weekend left a little bit more to be desired for me. It's going to be a fun game when those two teams play. And then Iowa, I just don't trust that offense. I don't know if I would beat, and they got the benefit of four turnovers in that Iowa State football game, which is propping up Iowa at this point. And they had, you know, two pick sixes against Indiana, and Indiana, I don't think is that good of a team this year. They're fine, but they're not what they were last year. Iowa, they benefited a lot from turnovers early, and we all see that Iowa State's not that good. We see that Indiana's not that good. Would Iowa, with the offense, they only put up 180 yards or whatever it was. It was definitely under 200. They only put up 180 yards on Iowa State, and they struggled. Only had 7 points by halftime against a team this past week that lost to Vanderbilt. Like, do we trust that offense against some of the other Big Ten teams that they'll play? Oh, it's only getting started for Iowa moving forward. It ain't Indiana anymore. And when this thing gets going, that's why I'm out on them.
Michigan State, I am in on. I'm on the fence on Michigan, and I am out on Iowa as well. Look, nobody's talking about Iowa right now. Even though they're the fifth-ranked team in the country, nobody's talking about them.
By default, got number five.
And I think there's a reason for it, because like you mentioned, Indiana's not as good as we thought they were. Iowa State is clearly not as good as we thought they were. They struggled against Colorado State, who lost to Vanderbilt, as you mentioned. I don't know how much longer they're going to be able to keep this act up, because their next two games are against Maryland, who is currently 4-0, and at home against number 4 Penn State, who I think it is an actual legitimate opponent. Yeah, the reason I'm in on Michigan State, though, over Michigan, is for the reasons you mentioned. Rutgers, it was not an impressive performance for Michigan. 20-13 was the final score. I just feel like Michigan State's played better quality competition, and they've actually gone out there and made statements. I feel like Washington was not a very good team, and I know Michigan beat up on them, but they're still not a very good team. So, yeah, in on Michigan State, on the fence on Michigan. I feel like I need a little bit more information on them to judge where they are truly at. It's going to be a fun game, by the way, between the Spartans and the Wolverines later on this year. But and I'm out on Iowa because that they don't right now, they don't deserve to be, based on what we've seen. If you watch their games, they're not the fifth best team in the country. And I think that over these next 2 weeks, I think you're going to see back to back games where they struggle. Third list of teams here: Penn State, Iowa, Cincinnati. This is another interesting group. I'm just going to go ahead and give my three right here. I am in on Penn State. I'm on the fence on Cincinnati, and I'm out on Iowa. Again, the reason I'm out on Iowa for all the reasons that we were just talking about. The reason that I'm on the fence on Cincinnati is because we saw the way they played against Indiana, and they're still a Group of Five team. And I know they've got good coaching. I know they've got good talent. But after seeing what Penn State's been able to do so far this season, will they be able to keep it going? I think there's a possibility. I think they could catch fire and they could continue to play better. But right now, if I had to pick between Penn State and Cincinnati, I'd probably pick the Nittany Lions to win that game. And I just think they have a higher trajectory than Cincinnati. Not to say that Cincinnati's out of the playoff race or anything like that. They could still get there. It's just I like this Penn State team and the momentum they have right now moving down the line.
Penn State is what Auburn could have become and what we could have been talking about Auburn right now had Bo Nix improved. I mean, and I think that's really well said when you compare Sean Clifford's stat line and his career to Bo Nix's career. We were seeing near identical quarterbacks. It was like the Spider-Man meme. And then what happened? Sean Clifford was the one that won that football game, and now Bo Nix is fighting for his job. So, and may have already lost it, to be fair. And so I think that, you know, Penn State is a team that has taken the next step, but the question is they still haven't beaten an Ohio State this year, and they'll get that chance later on in the year. There's still many more tough games left on the Penn State schedule. They'll have a chance to prove their ranking, but right now they look to be more complete than Michigan. I think they look to be more complete than Michigan State, than Iowa, and they get to play all these teams. Are they more complete than Ohio State? We'll find out.
Going to head to the phone lines now before we get to our next group of teams. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial, and Brett's on the line with us. Brett, what's on your mind?
Hey, guys. With all the talk about the quarterbacks, neither one of them played well last week.
Right.
But, you know, the difference in the last drive, if you really look at it, Kenyon made a great catch. Shanker had a 19-yard gain, which he didn't catch the ball. And there was no procedure penalty like there was on at least two of the four field goal drives. I have no idea who should start. But if you're going to start doing facts and figures, T.J. Finley, his record is 2-2 as a starter. He's never beaten a Power 5 team that finished a season with a winning record or that will finish a season with a winning record. Bo Nix throws an interception one out of every 64 passes. Finley throws one out of every 32. Finley's never thrown for over 50% against any Power 5 team. So, you know, this some people better watch out what all they ask for. Finley throws a very hard ball, got a super strong arm, but it's flat, straight as an arrow. Long out and a slant, he's good. Not real sure about any of the other throws.
Who would you start this weekend?
Due to where we're playing, as loud as it will be, and we don't need to make a mistake to give the other team some juice, I'd start Nix, give him three series, and go from there.
Yeah, and I don't disagree too much with what you said. I really don't disagree at all. I mean, I have said throughout the week that, although I want T.J. Finley to start, I think Bo will start and he'll have a short leash. But, B, do we really know that T.J. Finley is that guy that's going to fix the issues? Because if you're wrong, then it's like a relationship where you said to the other person, I think we should see other people, and it's never quite the same. Now, with that being said, I have heard callers on other shows throughout the state this week that have said if Bo Nix can't handle being benched, then he's not mentally tough enough to be on my football team. And I also agree with that. There's just so many layers to this whole thing.
Yeah, well, I don't think Carson's going to worry about what either one of them think or all that. He's going to go with who he thinks can get the ball to somebody and get the ball in the end zone. And, you know, he obviously knows better than I do.
Y'all 100% knows better than me, too.
That was Brett on the line with us. Really appreciate all the phone calls today. And it's always fun I'm not saying, like I said earlier on in the week, it was like, yeah, turmoil in college football. I love it. But I like whenever, you know, there's a lot going on with this Auburn football program, and I really appreciate everybody calling in and giving their opinion on it. It's really fun to engage with a bunch of different fans on this topic. But yeah, I really like the numbers that he gave there.
It was fun when turmoil was in college football, but now it's hit your team.
Right. Now it's
you're
here.
Like, oh, basketball season.
Now we're talking about basketball season. Let me tell you, Final Four or bust. But I really like the numbers that he brought up there about how Nix throws an interception every 64 pass attempts and Finley throws one every 32 right at half. I don't know if that's true. I'll take his word for it. I will say, though, Finley, I'm not going to try and sit here and say that he's a terrible quarterback. Because he has completed over 50% of his passes in a few games that he's played against Power 5 competition. I believe it was over 80% in the South Carolina game he played last year. But still, I mean, that's not a great opponent, so I understand the point he's trying to make. But moving forward, yeah, like you mentioned, Noah, it's going to be really difficult to kind of pinpoint a guy and go with him and then go back on that decision. Just going to have to see what the coaching staff does Saturday. I'm going to go back to the phone lines now, 334-321-1390. Inspector is on the line with us. Inspector, what's on your mind?
Hey, I want to ask y'all, do y'all really think Shanker didn't catch that ball?
I think when you look at it over and over, if you look at the replay, I think there's an argument to be made that he didn't catch it. It's difficult to tell whether or not his left arm is really underneath the catch through the entire play. If you had to just ask me and let me guess, I would say no. I thought it was incomplete. There was just too much gray area on whether or not he caught it. But I will say, though, the fact that they ruled it a completion to begin with, again, you have to have video evidence to like indisputable video evidence to overturn it. So it was really difficult to overturn.
Yeah, I was gonna say he was wearing black gloves. Okay.
Right.
And what I saw, and I played it frame by frame, and his hand was between the ball and the ground, and when he brought it down to his chest, he hit the ground at the same time, and the nose of the ball hit the ground, but his hand was still underneath the ball. So, yeah, like you say, it was ruled a catch on the field, but there was no evidence. No, it was inconclusive whether it was incomplete.
Had they ruled it incomplete to begin with, do you think in the review they would have flipped it to a complete catch?
Again, if they had ruled it incomplete, I don't think there would have been enough evidence. Well, it depends on who the looker is, I tell you the truth. If I was in Birmingham, I would have called it a completed pass because he had black gloves on. He had the ball in the palm of his hand when he hit the ground, even though the nose of the ball hit the ground. So, you know.
I think you also have to take into consideration, like, did he use the ground? And this is something that I don't know if they go to this often enough, especially at the different levels of football that there are. But did he use the ground to help him complete the catch? And I don't think he did.
No, I mean, it's one of those situations. I mean, if you're going belly first to the ground, it's obvious that the ground's going to push the ball back into your gut, even though your hand's there anyway.
Yeah.
So
Auburn definitely benefited, though.
they did, for sure.
Yeah, that's the reason I think it wasn't enough evidence to overturn the call of the field. And so I'm just going with that. If I'd been there, a referee, I would have called a completed pass. I mean, tell you, if he had white gloves on there, that might have been a different story, but you couldn't really tell anything with the black gloves on the head.
Yeah, it's definitely tough to make a call if he had white gloves. Spectre, we really appreciate the phone call.
Thank you.
That was Spectre on the line with us, 334-321-1390. Going to go ahead and take a quick break, and on the other side of it, we wrap up the show. Wrapping up the Thursday edition of On the Line, Lance Dahl, Noah Gardner here with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. JR called in, and he left intern Sting with some interesting information. Sting, want to go ahead and share that information with us? Sting? You...
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Apparently, Brian Harsin is a certified drag racer.
Yeah, we knew that.
I knew that.
Sting didn't know that.
Wasn't prepared for a segment and didn't know that Brian Harsin's a race car driver.
Sorry, I'm reading the article about it.
He's learning right now. He told JR, he's like, man, I learned something new today. It's going to be a fantastic rest of my day.
Yeah.
There you go.
So. Does he look like a race car driver?
Yes.
I think he does now that I have this information. Yeah, I think he does.
I think so. When I first heard that information way back when he was hired, I was like, yeah, that fits. Like, this is – I like this guy.
about a week or so ago, somebody – I don't remember who it was, but Saturday Down South put it on their socials, like, what every SEC head coach – like, what their job would be if they wouldn't. There was some fantastic stuff there. I can't remember what Harsin's was.
I can't either.
But it was
it was like a mega church pastor.
Oh, yes, that's what it was. Some fantastic stuff there. Yeah, but yeah, I knew he was a drag racer. I'm glad that we all could educate ourselves in the studio about that. And I appreciate the phone call, JR. It's cool stuff to have your head coach also do something as cool as drag racing just on in his free time. It's pretty dope.
The most accurate one of that group was professional barbecue pit master for Sam Pittman.
Yes, yes.
He even has the name.
That's absolutely fantastic.
He looks 100% like he is a boss at doing that, like 100%.
Wasn't there one that was a used car salesman?
Oh, there was all kinds of insurance agents, salesmen, and whatnot. It all fit.
Yeah, I think it was Drinkwitz. Drinkwitz, used car salesman.
Oh, man, that's going to do it for the Thursday edition of On the Line. Really appreciate all the phone calls. Christian Clemente, really appreciate him stopping by. Going to see y'all tomorrow. Going to have some Saturday selections coming up on tomorrow's show. You're not going to want to miss it. We'll see y'all then.